Lake Merritt. Downtown is an unfathomable place for a bird sanctuary, but there it is, Lake Merritt, 3.2 miles around as runners fly, slightly more for the bikers. It is a place for urbanites to remember they are a part of nature, for adults to introduce children to the feathered people. Hand-feeding pigeons is fun for two-year-olds who can be scared by the Canada geese taller than toddlers when they stretch those goosenecks. Rambunctious little boys of 6 or 7 or 8 chase the geese, who prefer an ungainly waddle run to flight if they can get away. Lake Merritt is a place to get a view of bird's eyes. One doughty brown cormorant, tame enough to walk among us, displays his species' surprise. Emerald eyes, the rangers say, look faceted when they catch a certain light. The night heron's eyes are outrageously orange, clashing with their plumage, blue-gray on their backs, dirty satin-white chests, yellow feet. Wait a minute. I guess everything clashes on a night heron. The hazel eyes of seagulls urge me to quickly throw my bread. As they vigorously flap their wings, their eyes say, "Hurry! I'm not built to hover." Downtown is an unfathomable place for a bird sanctuary. A pterodactylish pelican gliding through the skyscraper canyon across the street from the western shore finds nothing of pelican interest and glides home. Eritrea in Oakland. Short black women in long white veils take their morning walk near Lake Merritt, looking not the least bit oppressed in their modest dress, but rather like priestesses. Faces visible, hands free, colorfully skirted and comfortably shod, these grandmothers of their tribe gracefully float down the street to the timeless rhythm of their ancient culture, as around them the community of carpoolers, cell phoners, and high-heeled click-clackers rushes into another disposable day. Goosenalities. Where is individuality? I see its mark even in the geese at Lake Merritt. These walnut-brained fowl move in flocks, respond to the stimulus of humans crinkling bread wrappers, but they're no automatons. There is one who will step on my feet and peck at my purse, demanding bread. I suspect this one knows I come with the $2.50 a loaf 12-grain stuff. But another will not come near, no matter how many comrades gorge themselves at my hand. And then there is the one so aggressive he spends more time chasing others away than catching bread for himself. He sticks out his tongue and hisses at them and at me. I don't like him. He gets an etiquette lecture. But eventually I feed him too, wondering, wherein resides that which gives them their goosenalities? Return to Standard Time. The extra hour made the day feel long, but dusk came early. Until the apartment lamps adjust to dawn, I'll grope to lock my door as blind men do. For months it will be dark when I leave work, a job in a gray cubicle away from the windows. What is this booming economy? What kind of society apportions light and air according to status on an organization chart? What is prosperity? I'm told to strive for a bigger piece of the pie. I'd rather have a bigger piece of the sun. Locks and keys. Having locked myself out of my apartment, I pondered the illusion of solidity. If scientists are right, if atoms are mostly empty space, why can't I walk through walls or rearrange my emptiness into a thinness that could slip under the door? Or why, at least, can't I, through telepathy, teleport the keys into my hand? How can these mostly empty walls impede the grasp of my thoughts? Could I individually break the agreement on solidity and move the quantum idea of me anywhere at thought speed? Would creation come undone if this could be achieved by me or by anyone or by us all? Or could this be creation's next step, a permeability of boundaries between things, between dimensions? Can such be our destiny, but also a magic the gods withhold until we become a race that no longer needs locks and keys? Young boxer. Young boxer, his gold sequined robe gleaming in the sun, jogs by the beauty salon. I've seen him shadowboxing on Grand Avenue. Is he a dreamer or a contender? Sparrow. A child learns the limits of his magic. A squirt from his water gun cannot revive the sparrow lying dead in the grass. The old salt. The old salt who lived next door is now adrift in a sea of beer. For a couple of days he made landfall behind a dumpster. Today, brain becalmed, he naps on a low brick wall. He's not penniless. He's buffeted by fears of losing his treasure. Social welfare bureaucrats are pirates, after all. He's lost at least 50 pounds in the past year. I've noticed the newer homeless are now older, and as likely to be white as to be black. Is this a sea change? Child's play. The feather duster's a thing of wonder to little boy 3, who at 10 p.m. should be in bed sleeping. Instead, he's with his parents, who are locking the entrance to the office they've been sweeping. Coins. The basket groans under the weight of pennies, nickels, and leftover dimes. Once filled with lighter treats, it was a present from a tennis partner 17 years ago when I was ill and of meager means. The handle has long since broken off under the weight of other coins long since saved and spent. The green faux velvet bag on the table was once nearly full of quarters, half dollars, Susan B. Anthony silver dollars, and a magnet to attract more. Now it is just half full. I begin wrapping coins again as I have before. The fullness of the basket bespeaks of having had steady work for quite a while, likewise the green bag. Coins that on layoff pay a train fare or buy a cheap meal and stave off dipping into my savings account for laundry and minor things. Most of the basket's weight is in despised coppers. I no longer pick up pennies on the street, but I save them nonetheless and am grateful to have them when I'm not working. From time to time there's talk of abolishing them. Give them to me if they're such a bother. I wrap coins and take them to the deli or the bank to turn them into paper, which invites spending. I'm good at saving coins, but the paper flows through my fingers. I find more dimes on the street these days. Their silveriness catches my eye. And once or twice a quarter, too. And all those Susan B. Anthony silver dollars I found on the seat of a train with some quarters. Someone must have had a hole in his pocket. In fact, that happened twice. I once found a $20 bill on the street, and recently a one. But mostly I find dimes, and I pick them up, except this one time in Berkeley on the way home from KPFA, when a shaggy man lying in a dirty sleeping bag in a doorway asked me for spare change. I spied a dime on the sidewalk just 10 feet or so from where he lay, and I gave it to him. The coins that are insufficient to make a full roll go back to the basket or bag, seeds for the next crop. I had over $100 in coins this time, signs of months of work, and a little good luck finding 11 Susan B. Anthony silver dollars on the train. And oh, one Greek coin, mistaken for a nickel that somehow found its way to me. A greeting from the gods. Newsrex. Someone left potatoes on the newspaper rack in front of McDonald's on University and Shattuck. Not French fries, but 3 real tubers in their skins and garden-grown irregularities. 2 oblong, like yams, the third one thin like a carrot, enclosed in a clean, clear plastic bag under the bright solstice moon. Millennia ago, anonymous traders left their wares at the crossroads at monuments called Herms, sacred to the god of commerce. News racks and the tops of city garbage cans are the new Herms of Berkeley, where hunger and compassion anonymously trade their wares. I once left half a salad on Telegraph Avenue. Years ago, I left a dead pigeon on a news rack in front of a bus stop in Indianapolis. On a cold January morn, a few days after a snow, a car hit the bird. It must have been a glancing blow, for there was no blood. my neighbor, the illegal immigrant Mexican maid who had introduced me to mole, gathered the bird to her bosom as a mother would a child. She was tenderly cradling it in her coat as I approached. She was going to take it to the upscale home in which she worked in an effort to heal it. As she told me of the accident, the bird faded and died. I'd never seen any creature higher than a goldfish die before. The maid did not feel its death. I broke the news. Then she shrugged and handed me the corpse. And I, surprised to be handed a dead pigeon in Indianapolis in January, was grateful I was wearing gloves. The bus came. I left the pigeon's body on the news rack. It was gone when I came home from work. Perhaps Hermes Psychopompos guided its spirit to Hades, then had squab for lunch. Skillet. Illegal immigrant Mexican maid finds an old electric skillet in a cabinet she's cleaning out. She asks the lady of the house where she can buy one like it. The lady replies, "Keep it. That will be your pay for today." Open a box of 64. Open a box of 64. Inhale the aroma of colored wax. Adorn your bills with silver-winged stick-figure fairies bearing bags of money. Illuminate the margins of a fax with green suns and magenta moons. Print your name boldly on a white sheet of paper. Use a different color for every letter. Then ask yourself, why do adults let crayons slip from their lives?